Wednesday, March 4th, 2015, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado, coming to you this morning on a snowy, cold winter morning here in the Mile High City. Hey, you know, just so you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, and we bring you just a little bit different of an outlook on sports than you're going to get anywhere else. You can listen to it at your convenience. That's the great thing about the podcast as opposed to when we had the radio show earlier. You know, you can listen to it when you want to. You're sitting there at work. You got nothing else to do. Somebody, you know, that coworker that comes over and bothers you every single time it seems like you put your headphones on. You can pause it. You can wait for them to leave. You can politely ask them to get out of here. And then you can turn it back on without missing anything. That's the great thing about the podcast. It's way more convenient. Hey, I've got something a little bit new for you this week. We are now up on iTunes. You don't have to go to any other sites. You don't have to go anywhere else. You can go directly to iTunes, search Daily Dose. It's going to come up. You're going to find it. I've tried it. It does work. Took a while to get us on iTunes. I'm telling you, I had to jump through some hoops, had to do a few backflips, but we finally have it up there. The great thing about having it on iTunes, you can subscribe to it. Now, in the past, you could subscribe to it on iTunes. You just couldn't find us actually in the iTunes store. We are now there. You can subscribe, you can rate, you can review. Please, if you are a regular listener, please, please, please help us out. Go on there, give us a rating, give us a review. It doesn't have to be anything huge. Go on there and say, hey, love the podcast. Boom, done. Give us a five star rating and you're finished. Doesn't have to be anything other than that, but it's really, really convenient, I know, to have it on iTunes. If you are not an iTunes person, and I get it. I understand if you're not. But if you're not an iTunes person, you can still go to Stitcher. You can still go to podcastdirectory.com. There's a number of other places out there you can find it. You can also, I'm going to give you something else in just a second. I don't want to tell you just yet. Hey, this week, we've got a number of things to talk about. We've got the NBA. NBA is starting to shape up a little bit. We've got NFL free agency coming up. College basketball. We're down to the final week of the regular season. The madness is coming. Going to talk just a little bit of NHL. Got some UFC stuff we're going to talk a little bit today and some Major League Baseball. And of course, a very popular segment here. We are going to give you the Daily Dose Top 5 as usual. You do not want to miss that. A very, very popular segment here on the Daily Dose. I've got a couple things for you. If you want to contact me, easiest way to contact me, you can go to Twitter, you can go to Facebook, you can find me on either one of those. Twitter handle, and this is a little bit different, so pay attention. Twitter handle is now at Daily Dose Sports. Boom, at Daily Dose Sports, done. You can find me on Twitter. Facebook, at Daily Dose Sports. You can find me on Facebook, Daily Dose Sports. Very, very easy. Keep it the same all the way across. You know, but I got something else for you. Just something, if you're a regular listener, I've got something else for you that I want to throw out there. We now have a website. You can go to dailydosesports.wordpress.com. I know it's kind of long for now. We may shorten it later. But dailydosesports.wordpress.com. And you have articles up there you can comment on. We've got polls up there you can check out. It's a little different. I'm telling you right now, it's heavy on the sarcasm. Do have some sports stuff on there that you've come to expect. But check out the articles. Let me know what you think. I think you'll like it. You can contact me on there as well. You can, you know, give us comment, give us some feedback on what you see there. But we do have the website up. Again, that is dailydosesports.wordpress.com. If you're bored at work, the cool thing about the website, and I did check this out because I know what it's like. Let's say you're in that meeting that you really don't feel like being at work, or let's say you're over at the mother-in-law's house and you're just kind of bored, but you can't completely tune out, but you just want something to kind of glance at. Perfect. This will come up on your mobile device, and it's actually real readable. The articles aren't real long, quick stuff that you'll get in and out. Hopefully you'll enjoy it, but check it out. See what you think. Got a lot of things coming out in the world of sports. We got a lot of things to talk about today. Let's jump in. First off, the big news really yesterday was that the Philadelphia Eagles, we don't see many big trades in the NFL. We see them in the NHL. We see them in NBA. We see them sometimes in Major League Baseball. You don't really see them a lot in the NFL. But yesterday, the Philadelphia Eagles agreed to a trade with the Buffalo Bills. They send... the Bills will send linebacker Kiko Alonso to the Eagles, and the Bills pick up running back LeSean McCoy. Won't be official until later this afternoon, but that is the trade that looks like it's in place. Now, when you hear that, there's a couple things that stand out to me. One, I know Bills fans are excited because Bills fans are looking at that and saying, hey, we're going to, you know, Rex Ryan, we're going to have the tough defense, we're going to go ground and pound on offense. Eagles fans, I know, were a little bit upset. I know Eagles fans were sitting there saying, what are we doing? We're giving this away. Eagles fans, let me tell you what you're doing. You are saving money. You are keeping money aside. You are going to, I believe, you're going to make a run at trying to get Marcus Mariota in the draft. I believe Chip Kelly wants his guy. At some point, though, because, you know, Alonzo is also an Oregon guy. At some point, I start looking at Chip Kelly and saying, you're kind of going Steve Spurrier on us. It seems like you're trying to get all your ex-college players. I'm a little bit concerned about that. But now, the Eagles are going to have probably the money to spend and keep Jeremy Maclin. I don't think he's going to go anywhere. So it's not all bad. And hey, Marcus Mariota, I really think they're going to try to make a run at him. So Bills fans, I know you're excited, but we have a little bit of more breaking news. A little bit more breaking news. The Buffalo Bills today have now agreed to another trade. They're going to get quarterback Matt Cassel from the Minnesota Vikings. So, Bills fans, as excited as you were about getting LeSean McCoy, now you've got Matt Cassel for like an undisclosed pick. So you didn't give up much to get him. You shouldn't give up anything to get him. Here's the thing that I'm looking at when I see this move. I look at the Bills and I think, okay, they're going to go defense. They're going to go ground and pound, like I said. But they don't have a lot of faith in EJ Manuel. We saw him last year. It's just, he's got a cannon for an arm. But you just don't know where it's going to go. I mean, it's Tebow-esque in delivery. And so you just, I mean, you have no idea where he's going to throw it. Now, I think they're going to probably bring Matt Cassel in to kind of tutor EJ Manuel and see if they can't get him up to speed as an NFL quarterback. Very, very similar to what the Browns are talking about doing, bringing in Josh McCown to kind of tutor Johnny Manziel. Here's the problem. McCown can play a little bit. Matt Cassel, that's a lot like bringing in a blind seeing eye dog to lead this blind person around. I don't know if I want Matt Cassel teaching my quarterback how to play the position, because that's not exactly how I want you to play the position. That scares me at least a little bit. Going to talk a little bit about NFL free agency, because we did have, you know, designated franchise tag day this past week on Monday. And there's some interesting, not just guys who were tagged, but some of the guys who weren't. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. Andre Johnson with the Houston Texans wide receiver. You know, he is asking now for permission to seek a trade. Wants to get out of Houston. Doesn't feel like they've helped him out. He has a number of times, Andre Johnson has taken less money in the hopes that someday the Texans are going to finally pay me. Now he is asking for a trade. Now, Houston, I know, didn't want to pay him. And they're kind of acting like, we don't really think you can play anymore. We're not going to franchise you. Again, those guys that didn't get franchised, we're not going to pay you. We're not going to give you that money. He's forfeited some money. Where could he end up? Where is somewhere that Andre Johnson could end up? Because I believe that he wants to go to a contender. I believe that he wants to go somewhere where he can prove I can play. And I think he'll go for less money. Could Andre Johnson end up in Denver? I'm just throwing that out there because, you know, Denver has some pieces in position where they could make a run. Andre Johnson would be a big, big difference. Would he want to come here and play with Peyton Manning? Most receivers do kind of flourish in that situation. Just throwing that out there. Hey, the judge in the Massachusetts murder trial of former New England Patriot Aaron Hernandez is not going to allow prosecutors to introduce evidence about the shooting of Hernandez's friends in Florida just a few months before the killing of Odin Lloyd, who he's on trial for now. You realize once Aaron Hernandez gets done with this trial, he just has to go to another trial for another murder of more people. Here's the thing, though. The only reason I bring this up, because, you know, there's not that much talk right now about Aaron Hernandez. It really hasn't captured us as a nation. But here's where it's going to get interesting. I'm just throwing this out there. Here is where it's going to get interesting. When Bill Belichick gets called as a witness, and I believe that that is going to happen. I don't know if it's going to be for prosecution or for the defense, but I believe Bill Belichick is going to get called. And when the Super Bowl winning coach gets called to testify in this case, then I think the nation might start paying a little bit more attention. That's going to get real interesting really fast because, you know, Belichick doesn't really expand. He's real quiet. He's real conservative. Doesn't give you anything. They call him to testify. We're going to get a little bit different look at Bill Belichick. Keep an eye out for that. Hey, let's jump in to the week, because we've got a lot of things to talk about. Let's jump into the NBA first off. The Denver Nuggets have fired head coach Brian Shaw. I know, everyone's shocked. Everyone's shocked. Brian Shaw came in. You know, there's so many people to blame in this situation. I know Brian Shaw is the easy blame. Oh, he can't coach. He's horrible since they brought him in. It's not just Brian Shaw. Brian Shaw clearly had a problem communicating with his players. He obviously struggled, especially communicating with the veterans on this team, because it seemed like every time you had these different veterans, that he couldn't get them to buy in. He couldn't get Ty Lawson on his side. He couldn't get Andre Miller on his side. He couldn't get these guys that you sit there and say, man, you got to get these guys to buy in. He couldn't get them to do that. So there's clearly a lack of communication there. There's a breakdown there. But there's a million people to blame for this mess that is Denver Nuggets. Don't forget that just two seasons ago, they were sitting as the 3 seed with like 57 wins in the season under George Karl. And then, you know, the Kroenkes decided, well, George Karl's kind of a pain. We don't feel like dealing with him anymore. So let's get rid of him. Yeah, how's that working out for you? I actually have an article on our website about this, you know, a little bit about the Kroenkes and what they did with George Karl. Brian Shaw, yes, he deserves some blame. This is a mess. But, you know, the biggest thing is I think these players deserve a lot of this blame. These players sound like they can't even be professional enough to get themselves ready to play a game. Did you hear the chant that they had last week in their game? I believe it was on Friday night when they chanted 1, 2, 3, 6 more weeks. 6 more weeks. Now, they tried to spin, no, 6 more weeks is what we were saying. That was the last time we had won a home game. We know what it meant. It was 6 more weeks till you're done with this season because you all have already checked out and are finished and have quit. Doesn't this situation feel a lot like Josh McDaniels? You had the veteran coach. You had Mike Shanahan. You bring in the young, unproven, never been a head coach. And now, you know, it goes sideways because he can't get everyone to buy in. He struggles with the veterans. It seems like there's headbutting between the players and the coaches. And pretty soon, everybody just kind of falls off and quits. Now, what I would expect the Nuggets to do is they'll go out and get that veteran. They'll go out and they'll get that guy that is going to get these players to buy in whether they like it or not. Let me throw out a name for you. And yes, I realize he's way too old. But for this collection of knuckleheads on this team, let me throw out the name that I want to be the next Nuggets head coach. Jerry Sloan. That is my vote for the next Nuggets head coach. Because he will come in and he will crack some skulls. And you will either get in line or you will get out. That is my vote for the next Denver Nuggets coach. I know he's like 90. I understand. But that's who I want. I want the veteran that is no nonsense. You will buy in or else. Plus, he's a winner. Give me Jerry Sloan. That would be awesome. Hey, Derrick Rose had his knee surgery for that torn meniscus last week. And from what we were told, the knee surgery went really well. And he could be back in 4 to 6 weeks. Also got an article about this on our website. Just lobbing that out there to you. But, you know, the thing that they said, they came out and said, you know, this knee surgery was minor for one thing. Let's be real clear about this. When you're Derrick Rose and you're having minor knee surgery, that's like Wes Welker saying, I had a minor concussion again. There is no minor surgeries at this point. Anything that they're cutting on his knee is major because this is a guy that's had to come back and come back and come back. But did you notice who said Derrick Rose could be back in 4 to 6 weeks? It wasn't Derrick Rose. It was Bulls management. Bulls management, who has always, always been cheap, been pushing their players to get back, had to, you know, sometimes even get sued because people felt like their doctors weren't exactly honest. They're who's pushing and saying, oh, no, Derrick Rose is fine. You got to remember, Derrick Rose has had surgeries in the past when they said, oh, yeah, he's fine. We think he can return. Only Rose doesn't necessarily feel that way. He seems to be one of those guys that's like, no, I'm tentative on this. I don't have the faith in it. I'm going to sit out just a little bit longer than what you guys are telling me. I'm starting to get worried about Derrick Rose. I feel like Derrick Rose, in order to come back, is going to almost have to reinvent himself and change the way he plays. And it made me think of one other player that had to do that. And if you're you know, one of our younger audience members, you're not going to understand this. But Ron Harper, back in the day when he was playing with Cleveland, was the high flyer, was the dunker, was the athletic elevation, could get his shot off. And then he had all the knee surgeries, and he had to change his game. And he came back and he played with the Bulls, and he was one of those guys that was a grinder, would come down, could play defense, was a stopper, changed his game completely. I kind of wonder if Derrick Rose is going to have to kind of remanufacture who he is, because this many surgeries and the way he plays, the style of basketball that he plays, I think lends itself. It's just very, very tough on his joints. I don't know if it's ever going to stand up. And like I said last week, there are certain people, I believe, that are just predisposed to these kind of injuries. I don't know what it is. It's their DNA, whatever it is. That just happens. James Harden was suspended one game for kicking LeBron in his giblet area. You know, that game on Sunday between the Rockets and the Cavs, it got a little chippy. And it seemed like it almost had that playoff feel to it. It was kind of fun because it almost did have that playoff feel to it where they were getting back and forth at each other. But what I wonder is down the stretch when LeBron was missing those free throws, we have seen that before. Did that game mean anything? Do we take anything from that game? Do we say, hey, Houston has kind of shown how to beat the Cavaliers? Or was it just a one-time thing? Was it just a, well, you know, LeBron had a bad game? And going to be interesting to see what the Cavaliers do. I know they ran Boston off the floor last night. But it's going to be interesting to keep an eye on what the Cavaliers do. And when LeBron is in that situation again, and maybe it's not to the playoffs, we have seen him brick some free throws in the past. It does happen. At what point do we start to see the Dallas Mavericks wake up and start playing? Is it ever going to happen? I'm watching this team, and they have so much talent. But I think that trade that they got when they got Rajon Rondo, I just feel like that was a bad match of skills. Because Rondo needs the ball. He needs the ball. And the problem is his coach, Rick Carlisle, doesn't want him to have the ball. He wants the ball to move. Ball is constantly moving. We get good rotation. We get good player movement. We get spacing. And Rondo wants the ball in his hands. And you saw the shouting argument they had last week. I got to tell you, Rondo's gone after this year, isn't he? I can't see him staying any longer because I think it's a bad fit for him. For one, he doesn't seem like the reckless player that he used to be. He doesn't seem like the stopper that he used to be. We already know he can't shoot. He can't even shoot free throws. He's gotten in his own head about shooting free throws. So what does he do? It's not an offense that allows him to just dribble and beat people off the dribble and then distribute. That's not what this is. I think Rondo's going to be gone. I think Rondo could end up being a Laker. Hey, I'm going to give you two teams, two NBA teams that sure look like they're going in different directions. And it might not be the teams that you think of. Because one team, before the season even started, we threw them out. And we said, this team is not a contender. This team is done. And this team is not going anywhere. And the other team, we refuse to throw out because we say, we know they're going to get back. We know they're going to get going. We know it's going to happen eventually. First team, the team we already threw out. I want you just to think about this. I'm going to give you a couple things to think about. First team, they are 8-2. In their last 10 games. They have now beaten Cleveland twice, beat Charlotte, beat New Orleans, beat Golden State. This team is fourth in points allowed. They are sixth in the NBA in rebounding. The only issue with this team has been on certain nights, they struggle to score. They struggle to generate consistent offense. But they could get a very, very good player back soon. And that player is Paul George. The Indiana Pacers, they're a half a game back for the eighth spot in the East. I know, it's the eighth spot in the East. But can you imagine if they get Paul George back and this starts clicking? Indiana Pacers, as bizarre as this sounds, could be a contender in the Eastern Conference. I know they're sitting on the outside just barely looking in right now. A team that we totally wrote off. When Paul George went down, we said, that's it. Pacers are out. We don't even have to worry about them anymore. I don't know who it's going to be, but it's not going to be the Pacers. Not so fast. Keep an eye on the Indiana Pacers because I don't think they're quite done yet. And if Paul George does come back, and they are saying that with the break he had in his leg, it was a clean break, no ligament damage, no tendon damage. They're saying he could be back before the playoffs. And if he does, look out. Could get a little bit scary. A team that we had kind of counted out, not quite done yet. Here's another team. They're kind of going in the other way. They're the team that we refuse to count out because we say we've seen this before. They're going to come back. 5-5 in their last 10. They are just 500 on the road. And this is a team that on the road has always been very, very good. Here's the thing to think about, though. They've had losses to Detroit. They've had losses recently to Utah, to the Jazz. And their best, their most consistent every single night player is 38 years old. Are we starting to see the end of the San Antonio Spurs? It seems like we might be. And I know that's blasphemy to talk that way and to say the Spurs might be, because we've seen this in the past. We start to count them out and all of a sudden they you know, hit the playoffs, they hit the stride, and you're going, oh man, how did we ever count them out? What were we thinking? I don't know if it's going to happen this year. Tony Parker is not playing at a high level. Manu Ginobili, not playing at a high level. And there are nights that just as a team, you know, they struggle. Kawhi Leonard is not having, yes, statistically he looks okay, but he's having some tough nights. Best player, most consistent player for this team, not even close, to Tim Duncan. And he's playing out of his mind. I can't believe how well he's playing at 38 years of age. But I'm starting to wonder if we are seeing the end of the Spurs. Because if they get into a 7-game series with a team like, say, the Thunder or Golden State or Memphis, I don't know if they're getting out of that. I don't know if they're going to come through. We'll wait. We'll keep an eye on this. But those are two teams that you might want to keep an eye on because they are kind of going in different directions right now. Talk a little bit of NFL. You're starting to see the NFL franchises. They're starting to make their moves. They're starting to get ready for free agency to begin. Next Tuesday, the 10th, I believe it's at 4 p.m. Eastern time, free agency begins. So 2014 contracts are null and void, and we start the new season right then. That's when the new season starts. Franchise Tag Day was on Monday. Want to talk a little bit about the franchises that did tag players, because there were six that tagged players that are interesting. The six teams that did tag franchise players. And if you don't know what that means, because we throw that term out a lot. What the franchise tag means, basically, is that I have first option to sign you, and I can either limit you from talking to other teams, or other teams can talk to you, but I can still match their offer if they were to. It was basically put in so that big-name players weren't allowed just to leave. You will have guaranteed money for 1 year, and then I can try to re-sign you the next year. That's what the franchise tag is, if you don't know what that is. Couple teams that did tag their franchise player. The Kansas City Chiefs tagged linebacker Justin Houston. That doesn't seem like a big deal. He had a huge year this past season. But Justin Houston doesn't want to be tagged as a linebacker. He wants to be tagged as a defensive end because a defensive end would demand more money. And they're going to have to pay him based on that position that he plays. Keep an eye on that one. The Denver Broncos tagged wide receiver Demaryius Thomas. I understand why they did it. I'm not entirely sold on it, but I do understand it. Demaryius Thomas should remain a Bronco. If they do leave, let's say Chicago Bears come in and they say, hey, Demaryius Thomas, we're going to give you $80 million. Broncos don't want to match it. And they left, then the Broncos would get two first-round picks. So it's very, very expensive to try to get, you know, someone like that. Dallas Cowboys tagged Dez Bryant, wide receiver Dez Bryant, as their franchise player. Little bit risky. Dez has had his share of issues. Little bit risky. The New York Giants tagged Jason Pierre-Paul as their franchise player. Okay, yeah. I mean, he's always solid. Not maybe as good a year this past year as he's had in the past, but that's a guy I wouldn't want to let get away. The New England Patriots may have had the most interesting tagged player. They tagged their kicker, Steven Gostkowski, as their franchise player. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. And then the Miami Dolphins tagged Charles Clay, their tight end, as their transitional player. Now, here's the players that were not franchised, that was at least being talked about. The Detroit Lions did not tag Ndamukong Suh, which means he will be a free agent. I know the Lions are going to try to re-sign him. I know that they want him to remain in Detroit. This is a difference maker. This is a guy that is going to demand a huge amount of money. But I don't know if the Lions have that kind of money. And I'll tell you some of the teams that do. The Raiders, the Jaguars, maybe even the Chicago Bears. They've got a ton of money that they could give to Ndamukong Suh. Couldn't you just see him going to the Oakland Raiders? The Raiders have so much cap money that if they don't spend it, they're going to actually lose some money. So they have to spend money. It is going to happen. Keep an eye on Ndamukong Suh. I could see him signing with the Raiders. And as a Bronco fan, concerns me a little bit. Not a ton, but it concerns me a little bit. The Patriots tagging their kicker. Why would you not tag Devin McCourty? I mean, Devin McCourty is one of the best safeties in the game. And instead, they go with a kicker. That tells me the Patriots probably are fine with McCourty leaving. And don't be surprised. I told you this last week. Don't be surprised if Darrelle Revis leaves as well. Because I believe that they feel like they can plug someone else into that situation. Dallas Cowboys did not franchise, obviously, DeMarco Murray. Do they think he's done? Do they think DeMarco Murray, they gave him so many carries these past few years. Do they think that maybe he's finished? Because that's kind of, it's either that or they just don't want to pony up, you know, that much money, $7 million for a running back. Running backs do not have the same value they once did. Now, don't tell Buffalo that. We'll keep that quiet from Buffalo fans because they're all in now on the running game. But running backs just don't have the value they once did. It's too tough of a position. You get too banged up. You get too injured. Couple free agents that are out there that I could see, going elsewhere. Randall Cobb, I could see him going to the Raiders. I could see that really, really easy. I think the Jets are going to pony up and try to get Devin McCourty because I think they have the money to do that. Julius Thomas, tight end, Denver Broncos. I don't see him in a Bronco uniform next year. I bet he goes to Jacksonville, maybe. Maybe Oakland. There are some murmurs here in Denver. Why didn't Julius Thomas play down the stretch? Oh, he had the ankle. Play through it. Was he saving himself for free agency? I know there were some people a little bit sour on that. I know there are some people that did not like that. I'll bet Mark Sanchez next year is in a Browns uniform. Couldn't you just see that? I think Brian Hoyer with the Browns now will probably be a Tennessee Titan. When this is all said and done. Hey, someone actually got Marshawn Lynch to talk about the Super Bowl. I believe it was like a TV channel in, I don't know, Indonesia or something. But they got Marshawn Lynch to talk about the Super Bowl and that final play of the Super Bowl game. And Marshawn Lynch surprisingly said he wanted the ball. He was surprised he didn't get the ball. He wanted the ball. Maybe they didn't give him the ball because they didn't want him to be, the hero of the game. But Marshawn wanted the ball. I'm shocked. He also admitted that apparently snow is cold and water is wet. So some really crazy, crazy opinions from Marshawn Lynch. Did you see the UFC fight? The bantamweight fighter Ronda Rousey over the weekend. She destroys the contender Kat Zingano in 14 seconds Saturday night. You probably didn't see it because honestly, There wasn't that many viewers that watched it. In fact, Ronda Rousey only made $136,000. I know, nothing to sneeze at, but only $136,000. Not even as much as some of the male fighters on the undercard made because it didn't get that many pay-per-view viewers. It's not that much. Here's the problem that I have with UFC. And we've talked about this a little bit in the past because I know I'm a glutton for punishment. I still watch boxing. I still try to at least keep up on boxing. And as we get a little bit closer to May, we will talk a little more about the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, and we'll get you ready for that. But here's the problem that I struggle with UFC because I saw the Rousey fight. I saw this fight she had with Zingano. 14 seconds. But here's the problem. Do you remember back in the heyday of Mike Tyson? Yes, he was knocking guys out in like 10 seconds. He'd get Peter McNeely in there and he'd knock him out in, 10 seconds or whatever. But, the thing that we got to see, at least, was we got to see the one haymaker and the guy's jaw dislocate and him hit the mat. In UFC, you get like this arm bar. I mean, if you saw this fight, there was no big punch. Like there was a tuck and a throw and then an arm bar and then she tapped out and it was over. I didn't get to see any punches. I don't know if there were any punches even thrown. That's the problem I have a little bit with you. I know you're sitting there going, oh, you're ignorant. You don't get it. You're right. You're right. There's still something about the sweet science of boxing, landing the blow, hitting the person. There's still something about that that appeals to me. I know I'm probably out there just a little bit too far for you. Talk just a little bit of Major League Baseball this week. Just a little Major League Baseball, not a lot of Major League Baseball. Did you see former pitcher Curt Schilling posted on Twitter this week that his daughter had signed to play college softball at, you know, such and such college? And the responses on Twitter were horrifying. And I can't even describe to you how horrifying they were. He posted on Twitter, my daughter made it into this college. There were people talking about, wait till your daughter gets to college. There was talk. A 17-year-old minor. There was talk about rape. There was talk about things that were going to happen when this girl came to college. Hideous, hideous thing. And this is the problem with, you know, the social media stuff, is that you have these people that have Twitter muscles. You have these people that say things on Twitter or on Facebook or whatever. They would never say it to your face because Twitter eliminates the threat of the punch in the face. And so they get on there and they can say whatever they want. But Curt Schilling didn't just sit here and say, oh, okay, well, they said this stuff and that's too bad. And sorry, you know. No, he went after him. He found where they work. And he found, hey, you know what? Just because you're on Twitter doesn't necessarily mean it's completely anonymous. Curt Schilling went out and he got some of these kids expelled from their colleges for what they wrote. He got some of these people fired from the jobs that they have when he showed their employers what they wrote on Twitter. And I absolutely commend him, because you don't just get to say whatever you want because you think you're on the anonymous social media network that you have. That doesn't excuse and give you the right to say whatever you want. I absolutely commend Curt Schilling for what he did here. Talk a little bit of NHL. You might not realize this. Did you realize that the state of Colorado, the Colorado Avalanche, is going to host an outdoor game in 2016 versus the Detroit Red Wings? They are going to, and I know this isn't breaking news. This is something that's been out there a little bit. But they are going to have the game. You know, they do this outdoor series. They're going to have this game at Coors Field in 2016. Now, that sounds great. And here in Denver, a lot of times we get that reputation where, it snows every day and you guys have freezing cold. And it's not Alaska. We have actually pretty mild winters. Here's the thing that I worry about. For one, you're having it in Coors Field, and we know that no one ever, wins there. I guess the away team will win there. But the thing about having it in Denver, remember in 2014, they had this game, I think it was in Washington, D.C., and it was the Capitals against the Blackhawks, and they had to postpone the game because it was so sunny. There was such a bad glare off the ice that the cameras couldn't even really, film the game. Here's the problem. Do you realize that Denver gets more sunshine than, say, Miami? We get like 300 days of sunshine. They better plan to have this game later in the day, because if you don't, I don't know if you're going to get it in. You might have a little bit of a problem. You better have this game after dusk. You have this at like 11 a.m., noon. No one's going to see it. The glare here, we get a lot of sunshine here in Denver. I know people don't realize that if you don't live here, but we get a ton of sunshine. Let's talk some college hoops. It is the last week of the regular season. March Madness is coming. Starting next week, we get conference tournaments. One of the best times of the year. One of the best times of the year. For all the talk, for all the hype about all these other events, you have the Super Bowl, you might have the World Series, you might have the NBA Finals, NHL Stanley Cup. None of them consistently live up to the hype of March Madness. Every year, March Madness is great. Every single year. Every single year, there's upsets. Every single year, there are great games. Every single year, you are on the edge of your seat, and it totally lives up to it. It is the only sporting event in the world that actually lives up to all the hype. Expect things in this last week of the regular season to get a little weird. And we've already started to see things get a little weird. And I'm going to tell you why they get kind of strange. Last week of the regular season, you saw just this over the weekend. Gonzaga, head and shoulders better than anyone in their conference, gets beat by BYU. Why does that happen? Georgia last night gives Kentucky as tough of a game as they've really had. I still am a little bit concerned about Kentucky playing in that SEC. I know you got over on Georgia last night. Georgia's not exactly the measure of the great team in the country. That might, I'm a little bit concerned about Kentucky as they get in the tournament when they do have to play great teams night in, night out. But, you know, some of the problem that you have, for one, you do have teams that know each other so much better. When you are in conference, I know your team as well as you know your team. We know you just that much better. The other thing is that last week of the season, you have senior night. And senior night, you drag these players out, you get them all emotional, you talk to them about how much it's meant to play in here, and it's their last home game, and here's their parents, and here's grandma, and you get them good and, you know, crying. And I know, coaching at the high school level, I know that it is an emotional night, and you never know who's going to handle it well. Some kids take it, and they say, hey, it's my last night, I'm going to go out, and we're going to have the best night, you know, I've ever played. And some of them handle it that way. Others get emotional. They can't handle it. They never quite get in a focus that they should, and you see them struggle. You're going to see this in the next week. Watch over the weekend how many upsets there'll be. There'll be a number of upsets that happen, and it is because these kids can't handle the emotions. You've started to even see at the college level, after the game, they switch the senior night festivities to after the game instead of before because they don't want the kid to have to deal with the emotions of all that nonsense that they do before the game. Did you see Vanderbilt coach Kevin Stallings last week? He made some headlines. Vanderbilt played Tennessee, big rivalry. And his own player, freshman Wade Baldwin, went through, you know, the handshake line and was talking trash to Tennessee. And Kevin Stallings grabs the kid, this is his own player, and says, "What are you doing? I'm going to," and he goes into this, you know, expletive narrative, "I'm going to kill you," was the gist of what he said. And there was a number of people, a couple people even reached out to me on Twitter and said, "What do you think of Kevin Stallings?" I understand it. Bad choice of words. I don't know if I ever want to tell my player, "I'm going to kill you," but I understood where he was coming from. We just won a game, act with class, act like you've done it before. Let's walk off the floor, shake their hands, and leave. We won. It's not like you're mad. We won. This is a kid, though, that he's had to, deal with a number of times. He's had to, already get on him a few times. This isn't the first time that Baldwin's had run-in with Stallings. The "I'm going to kill you" isn't so much a threat. Understand, it's more that, have you ever had, you know, your kid where they're doing something again and again, and you're like, "Oh, I'm going to kill you. What are you doing? Stop doing this." It was that. Not quite as big of a thing as what we make it. Now, I know we can't, it's a different generation, it's a different era. You can't coach the way Bobby Knight coached. It's a different kind of kid. It doesn't work that way. These kids wouldn't respond well to that. That's why Bobby Knight is in the booth and not on the bench, because it wouldn't work that way anymore. But I understand what Stallings said. Yes, bad choice of words. Don't go with the "I'm going to kill you" rant. That never goes well. There was a story this week that came out, and I don't know if you saw this in College Hoops. And this is where you can tell if you are a media person or you are a person that was involved in the athletic world and you actually understand the athletic world. Because there was a story that came out this week about how if you are in the NCAA tournament, you would be better off being a number 3 seed than a number 2 seed if you wind up in Kentucky's bracket. If you wind up in Kentucky's bracket, then you'd be better off just bumping back to a 3 seed because you don't want to be in that same, you don't want to be in that same bracket. If you're in that same bracket, then, I mean, it's just a matter of time before you get, bounced, and so you do not want to be in that bracket. Whatever the situation is, I don't want to be in the same bracket as Kentucky. And when I saw this, and this was a headline. I'm not talking about this was a little thing along the ticker at the bottom. This was a headline on a major sports network. Teams don't want to be a 2; they would rather be a 3. When they release the brackets, the thing that they try to do is they say, okay, the top seeds, we want to put you in an area where you're going to, you know, draw fans. Can I just tell you, as a former coach, and I understand, I'm not a former high school coach. When you get the brackets And I can tell you exactly how this goes down. Because you go to the bracket release, whatever it's going to be, whether they do a big hoopla or whether it's just a meeting and they hand out the brackets. When you go to these things and you get your bracket, you look at usually like three things. I look at my opponent. Who am I going to face in the first round? Okay, first round, I face them. What conference are they in? What style do they play? How do we match up? Those are the first things that I hit. Who do we play first round? Because if I don't get out of the first round, everything else is irrelevant. Second thing I look at, and this might go against, you know, what the media has got. Am I part of the media now? I feel like I'm media-ish, but I'm not media. I'm not putting myself in that group just yet. The second thing I look at is I look, who do I have to scout and where do I have to go? So if I can scout my next team right there in that same, you know, venue, great. But then who do I have to scout beyond that? Because who are we going to play beyond that? So I start looking at my scouting. Where do I have to see this? Have we seen this team before, these future teams? If we win and we go to the next round, where can I see this team? So that's the next thing I look at. And then lastly, I look at, okay, where do we play and can I get fans there? I don't care when I face Kentucky. I don't care when I face, I don't care. As a coach, coaches, I promise you, they don't look at this stuff. That's why you know this story was written by a media person. Because coaches couldn't care less. If I'm Bo Ryan this year with Wisconsin, I know I have to go through Kentucky to win it all. Unless someone just gets lucky and knocks them off before me. I know if I'm going to win a national championship this year, I'm probably going to have to go through Kentucky. I don't care when I face them. And if I'm the two, I'm probably not facing them until like the Elite Eight anyway. I don't care. I realize I have to face them. I'm not ducking anybody. That's not even the point. But it was just funny that people came out and said, well, you know, there's a big thing this year that they might rather be a three than a two. No, they wouldn't. They don't care. They don't care. I look at who I'm playing. I look at who I have to scout. And then, you know, I look at where can I get the most fans? Because if they're going to make me travel to the other side of the country, we're not going to have much support. That concerns me a lot more than if I have to play Kentucky in the Elite Eight. I'm not concerned about that. Doesn't bother me. A little weird. Do you realize this week is 25 years ago that Hank Gathers passed away on the court? Hank Gathers with Loyola Marymount. You know, we talked about Loyola Marymount and the squad that they had that year just last week. But think about this. Think of how close this is to the tournament. I mean, the tournament is going to start here in like 2 weeks. It was this close to the tournament that he passed away on the court. And you know, I just wanted to talk about this a little bit because, you know, he had passed out earlier in a game earlier that season. But on that night when Hank Gathers actually collapsed, he didn't actually technically die on the court. They took him to a hospital and he was pronounced there. They were playing University of Portland. And what you might not realize is the University of Portland had a player on its squad named Eric Spoelstra. Spoelstra actually witnessed that. You know, Loyola Marymount went on to the Elite Eight despite their best player and leading scorer, Hank Gathers, passing away and not being on that team anymore. They ended up losing to UNLV. And for those of you who don't remember, Bo Kimble, player for that team, he would shoot his free throws left-handed. He was struggling, actually, shooting as a righty. He was a right-handed player. He was struggling shooting. So he started shooting those left-handed because just out of remembrance of Hank, who was a lefty. Bizarrely and just kind of crazy, he made all of them in the tournament. He was making every single free throw that he shot with his left hand, but he did that out of remembrance to Hank Gathers. But if you're old enough to remember when Hank Gathers passed away 25 years ago, I know, sorry for making you feel old, I understand, but 25 years ago this week that Hank Gathers passed away, the run that team went on, that they rolled through that tournament despite losing their best player, really, really is incredible. You know, fun team to watch. They would pass up layups for threes. Fun team to watch. If you get to see them on one of the classic channels, there is a game out there that they've showed a couple times where they're facing LSU, and that game, it's like 120 to 112. I mean, they are getting up and down the floor. If you like scoring, you would have loved watching Loyola Marymount, a team that got up and down the floor and got a shot up as quick as they possibly could. It was absolutely incredible to watch what they did. Ended up going down to UNLV in the tournament, but a really, really fun team. And I know that for me, I really remember that situation with Hank Gathers. As we do every week, got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5 this week. And our Daily Dose Top 5, you may have seen, speaking of people passing away, you may have seen this past week, Anthony Mason passed away this past week. And Anthony Mason was one of those kind of tough guys. You know, he played with the Knicks, played, I believe, a little bit with Charlotte. Anthony Mason was a tough dude, was a banger, would go inside, was not afraid of anybody. Tough guy. Tough guy. And I started thinking about who are the toughest guys to ever play in the NBA. And I mean tough guys. Tough guys. And I've thrown the question out to a couple different people, a couple different friends, and just said, hey, toughest guys to ever play in the NBA. And I got, you know, some of the same standard answers again and again and again. Well, this guy was a tough guy, and this guy was a tough guy, and this guy, oh yeah, he was pretty tough. And I started thinking about who are the really, really tough guys in the NBA. Because like I've told you in the past, most NBA guys are not legitimately tough guys. Most of them have never been in a fight in their life. They've been the biggest guy their whole life. They've been told not to pick on anyone littler than them. And because they've been the biggest guy their whole life, people have been afraid of them their whole life. And so they've never actually been in a fight. They've never actually had to fight anybody. So to find genuine tough guys, not as easy as you might think it is. Now, the thing that I was really going through when I was trying to pick out the five tough guys is there's three kinds of tough guys that have played in the NBA. There's three kinds. And I want to talk about those real quick. Because I know when I say tough guy, the first thing you probably thought of were guys like Bill Laimbeer, Dennis Rodman. Yeah, I get it. But when most of your tough, so-called tough plays were cheap shots, I don't know if I really put you down as a tough guy. And I'm not saying Laimbeer wasn't a tough guy. Yeah, he was tough. But most of the plays he made were kind of cheap shots. They weren't necessarily tough plays. I can knock anybody out of the air when you're, you know, completely defenseless. That's not really tough guy. That doesn't stand up for me. And then there were the guys that are kind of, they act like they're tough guys. They're the poser kind of tough guys. They'll stand over you. They'll kind of, you know, act like they're, you know, the big menace, and they'll kind of follow you around. There's a lot of those guys. There's a lot of the poser tough guys. Hold me back. Hold me back. Oh man, good thing you stepped in between us. Otherwise, I really was. And then there's the tough guys. Now the posers, we have a lot of those in the NBA today. We have a lot of those posers that, again, they've probably never been in a fight in their life. And so they just act like, oh, you don't want any of this. Because if you really want to fight in the NBA, there's only 9 other guys on the court. If you really want to fight in the NBA, you can fight. It's not that hard. You don't have to step and push and shove. No, you just start hooking. The fight will happen if you want it to happen. There's a lot of posers that do the, you know, break us up, get between us, hold me back. They don't really want to fight. And then there's the tough guys. And when I say tough guys, I mean guys that will not hesitate to fight. In fact, they're fine with fighting. They have no problem whatsoever with fighting. Let me give you an example, because there's a couple guys that didn't make the list that really were tough guys. Guys like Maurice Lucas, who played with Portland for years. Tough guy, really good player, not a goon. There are goons, and there's even a couple, you know, maybe a goon or two on the list. There are goons that all they did was they were there to be the muscle. That's not what I'm talking about. Maurice Lucas was a tough guy. Vernon Maxwell was a tough dude. Vernon Maxwell was crazy. Mad Max. He was nuts. Ben Wallace. I believe Ben Wallace is a very, very tough guy. Is Ron Artest on the list? I'm not sure if Ron Artest. Ron Artest always came across maybe as crazy, but I think I saw Kobe step to him once, and then he kind of didn't do anything, so I don't know if you're that tough of a guy. Let me give you an example of a tough guy you might not know about. Do you remember back in the 80s, the Lakers had a tough guy by the name of Wes Matthews? And you might even remember there was a famous Sports Illustrated picture of Wes Matthews and Xavier McDaniel McDaniel had his hands around the throat of Wes Matthews and they were fighting. Got in a fight. McDaniel went right for the throat and started choking Wes Matthews. They broke him up. They split him up. And about a week later, the Sonics with Xavier McDaniel went to New York. Went to New York to play the Knicks. Wes Matthews apparently, allegedly, had some sort of contact between him and his boys or whatever, contacted Xavier McDaniel and said, hey, if you play in this game against the Knicks tonight, we're going to end you. You're not going to make it. Now, if you take a look at the box score, Sonics went to New York, faced the Knicks. Xavier McDaniel missed three games all year. Well, four total. December 1st, 1987. Take a look at the box score. Seattle Supersonics, Xavier McDaniel did not play. Later, like a week later, Wes Matthews gets fined $10,000 by the league. They never said why. They fined him $10,000. For some reason, McDaniels didn't play. I don't know why. There are certain guys out there that are a little bit tougher than everyone else. And when I say tough, I don't mean it necessarily in a good way. It might be crazy. It might be insane tough. But there are some guys out there you did not mess with. And by the way, I know you're thinking Xavier McDaniel belongs on the list of tough guys. He looked like a tough guy. He played the part, had the shaved head, had the big muscles. He kind of would scrap a little bit. He was more of the poser tough guy. Because I remember, was it like the 92 Eastern Conference Finals when MJ stepped right in his face, nose to nose, and said some things to Xavier McDaniel that you could read his lips, and they weren't exactly the most polite things, and X didn't do anything about it. That gets you eliminated from the tough guy list. You can't have MJ just step in your face. And hey, not that Mike was, you know, not tough. Very, very tough, but not a fighter. I mean, come on. Now, let's get to our Daily Dose top five NBA tough guys of all time. Top five NBA tough guys of all time. Number five, and number five might throw you off. When you hear this, you go, wait a second. Number five, Larry Bird. I know, you're sitting there going, wait, are you kidding me? Larry Bird, tough. Hey, Bird didn't talk about fighting. He didn't do the pushing and shoving. You want to fight? Let's fight. Larry Bird fought Bill Laimbeer, punched him square in his face, fought Dr. J. Who fights Dr. J? Fought Kareem, fought Charles Barkley. Larry Bird was absolutely unafraid to fight anyone. Didn't care. And like I said, it wasn't the poser, let's talk about fighting. No, you want to fight? Let's fight. He had no qualms whatsoever about throwing. And the thing about Larry, too, is Larry would talk trash to you, and he would back it up. He would back it up. There's the story, obviously, again, I hate to bring up Xavier McDaniel again, where they were playing, I believe he was with Seattle at the time. Take a timeout. There's like 3 seconds left. Celtics are down. Bird walks into McDaniel. McDaniel's got him and says, hey, I'm going to run down here. I'm going to come off the screen, and I'm going to hit the game winner right in your eye. McDaniel says, yeah, right, of course you are. Bird takes him down, comes off the screen, catches it, hits it right in his eye, and says, see, I told you I was going to do it, and you couldn't do anything about it. Bird would talk the trash, and Bird would back it up, but Bird had no qualms about fighting. If you want to fight, I mean, this was a old school farm boy. He would throw with anybody. Larry Bird was a tough dude. Make no mistake about that. Maybe not the image that you have in mind of Larry Bird. Larry Bird would fight anybody. Number four on our list of toughest guys in the NBA. This one's going to throw you off a little bit too, because it might surprise you a little bit he's on the list. But you got to trust me on this one. Number four, Jerry Stackhouse. Yeah, what? Jerry Stackhouse? Hey, Stackhouse didn't talk about fighting. Stackhouse would fight. When he was with the Sixers, he got into it with Allen Iverson. Now, Allen Iverson, I realize he's not a big dude, but Allen Iverson was kind of a tough little dude. And Allen Iverson was a little bit of a... Is thug the right word? AI was not above coming after somebody. I mean, he had his own issues. But Stackhouse said, hey, AI disrespected me. He didn't, I don't want to fight him, but he disrespected me. He socked AI in his face. You want a clip of a guy that it's not about talking about fighting? Check out the clip of Jerry Stackhouse and Jeff Hornacek with the Utah Jazz. They kind of have like words like, oh yeah, and Stackhouse just knuckle up, boom, starts popping him in the head. I mean, again, Stackhouse didn't talk about fighting. He would fight you. He had to actually be separated from, at the time, Hornets coach Byron Scott, because they started talking on the sideline, and Scott apparently told Stack, hey, I've got rings, don't talk to me. And Stackhouse tells him, yeah, if I played with Magic, Kareem, and Worthy, I'd have a ring too. And they had to actually separate him from fighting a coach. Jerry Stackhouse, you didn't want to mess with. Actually got in a fight on the plane with Christian Laettner, who was his own teammate. Christian Laettner wasn't playing at the time because I believe he had a broken rib. Didn't matter. Stackhouse socked him a few times too. Jerry Stackhouse, not afraid to fight you. Number three on our list, NBA tough guys. You might not think of this guy as a tough guy. He was a tough guy. Willis Reed, center with the New York Knicks. You know, we all remember Willis Reed limping back into Madison Square Garden with the leg injury, you know, in the playoffs. But what you might not realize is that 4 years earlier, he gets cheap-shotted in a game against the Lakers by Laker forward Rudy LaRusso. And Willis Reed, first off, punches LaRusso in the face about three times. And then the fight kind of spills into the Laker bench, and he just starts fighting everyone on the bench. I mean, Larry Imhoff's on the bench. You know, pops him over the eye. He has to get stitches over his eye. John Block is on the bench. Broke his nose for him. LaRusso actually had to get stitches as well. He fought like anybody. Okay, who wants to go next? He just fought the whole Laker bench. Willis Reed was a tough, tough dude. And from that old school, you know, time, that era when, hey, that's just what you have to do to survive. Willis Reed was a tough guy. Number two on our list. Toughest guys ever in the NBA. Got to have him on the list. Charles Oakley. Charles Oakley played a long time with the Bulls, played with the Knicks. Charles Oakley was Michael Jordan's original bodyguard. And you might sit there and say, okay, yeah, I get that. Well, if you know, we have the guy that if we feel like we can take Michael out, we'll take him out because we know what's going to... Well, Oakley wouldn't let that happen. Here's the thing you have to realize, though. Not only did Charles Oakley be the bodyguard for Michael while he was playing... He's still his bodyguard now, like his personal bodyguard. He follows Mike wherever Mike goes. He still to this day, is Michael Jordan's personal bodyguard. Now, I'm going to go ahead and guess, if you're his bodyguard, you're probably a tough dude. Just a guess. Do you realize this, though? Back when they were having, you know, the labor negotiations with the CBA, with the NBA... apparently Charles Oakley and Charles Barkley got into a little bit of an argument, and Oakley just slapped Barkley across his face. Charles Oakley was a tough dude. Hey, Barkley, I don't know that Barkley was a fighter, but Barkley was a tough guy. Barkley was no joke. Charles Oakley slapped Barkley across his face. And then he gets into a little bit of a scrap again. Man, I feel like I'm picking on Xavier McDaniel today. He gets into a little bit of a scrap with Xavier McDaniel in a playoff game, and he actually kind of throws Xavier into the Madison Square Garden crowd. Charles Oakley was no joke. His nickname, not real original, was Oak, and that's kind of the way he was. Just solid, and you didn't want to mess with him. More times than not, it was a matter of, I don't want to fight Charles Oakley, because he's just a big, strong, tough guy. Number one guy on our list, Daily Dose Top 5, toughest NBA guys of all time. This is a guy you're going to sit there and say, who? Who are you talking about? I don't even know who that is. This might be the scariest dude to ever play in the NBA. Number one tough guy on our list, Alvin Robertson. Alvin Robertson, a little bit of a journeyman, not a bad player. Played with the Spurs, played with the Bucks. You might remember him a little bit with the Pistons and Raptors at the end of it. Alvin Robertson was legitimately scary. Like, might kill you scary. Want evidence? He's serving time in a Texas penitentiary right now. There is a clip, if you go back and find it, the Orlando Magic was playing maybe when he was with Toronto, and they get into a little bit of a scuffle. Shaquille O'Neal actually gets into a little bit of a scuffle, and Robertson kind of grabs Shaquille. Now, Robertson was like a 6'3", 200-pound guy. He wasn't the huge NBA guy. He was like 6'3", 200 pounds. Tough, tough defender, really tough defender. And he kind of grabs Shaquille and kind of sets him to the side. Just kind of pulls him out, hey, hey, no fight, no fight. And Shaquille kind of gets mad and kind of pushes him off and then takes a swing at Robertson. Robertson goes after Shaquille O'Neal. I don't mean like goes after like, oh, you want to, no, like go, like let's fight. I want to fight you. Goes after Shaquille O'Neal. Alvin Robertson was legitimately scary. There are players that say when they came into the league, they were warned by other veterans, never talk trash to him. Give you just a brief story. Reggie Miller, former Indiana Pacer, Hall of Famer, one of the great players of all time. Reggie Miller says he was playing in a pickup game one time in the offseason with a number of NBA players, you know, like Dale Davis and Detlef Schrempf. There were a number of big-time players in this game. And he said the whole game, Alvin Robertson is keeping the score, and the whole game he's kind of cheating on the score. Like, you guys haven't scored, but he keeps adding points. And we just scored, and you didn't give us our points. And you know, you've played with those guys. You know, it's 10-6, and we hit a bucket, and you're like, okay, it's 11-5, and you're, wait a second. I know you changed the score. Reggie Miller says, with all these NBA players, as competitive as they are and as badly as they want to win, no one corrected Alvin Robertson. They just let him cheat all day long. Alvin Robertson, our number one tough guy of all time in the NBA. Scary tough, not nice, cuddly tough. No, like the guy that goes to the trunk when there's a disagreement. Alvin Robertson was scary. Hey, got to, you know, we don't get too serious here on the Daily Dose, as you all know, but got to get a little bit serious here. Long-time listener and friend of the Daily Dose, we had a listener just recently. I was notified that Laverne in Arizona recently passed away. And for those of you who don't know, Laverne in Arizona was someone who listened to the Daily Dose every week. She had been sick and had actually, it was interesting, had actually sent me an email around Christmas time and had said, hey, just wanted to say thank you for the articles you write, and I love listening to the podcast and like listening to the show. When I was sick, just want you to know that the show kind of kept my spirits up and kind of kept me going. Laverne passed away this last week. And so would just like to wish, you know, Godspeed and thoughts to her family. You will be missed. Also would like to wish a very happy birthday to the man that taught me anything I know about sports. If I know anything, have to thank my dad, my father, Bob Daly, for all that he taught me and for everything that he's done for me in my life. Happy birthday to him. He turns 81 tomorrow, so happy birthday to you. Thank you for all that you've done for me. Hey, next week, we're going to be talking college basketball conference tournaments. They are coming down, and that is always a fun time of year. NFL free agency, like I told you, gets going next Tuesday. We will be just in time on Wednesday. I told you before, we are now on iTunes. Go to iTunes, please. You can subscribe, you can rate, you can review. Get us all there. Facebook at Daily Dose Sports. Twitter at Daily Dose Sports. You can now go to our webpage, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. Check out a couple of the articles. Let me know what you think. There's a couple of polls on there that you can vote on. We will see you all next week. As usual, could not do this without JSP. Thank you for all that you do for us. I will see you all next week. Have a great week, everybody.